Blog Talk Radio. Log Talk Radio.
This thing right here,
yeah.
It's for my people in the streets.
Yes, today. You know, as we start this show, this one mic.
We
There is a pause throughout the stadium as this man sounds like he just coughs up a lung. They're looking around. The Jumbotron shows and pans the cheerleaders, and as it goes down each cheerleader's face, each one breaks up into laughter, which at this particular time destroys half the stadium. The other half is still trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Does this guy need CPR or something? And then at that particular time, I lost it. Devon Russell.
Yes. Today,
Love Talk Radio.
Show this one, Mike.
Phoenix is another place. They got a great training staff. I mean, they were able to breathe life back into Shaq. And if you can do that, you know, people talk a lot about their training staff.
Yes, today, you know, as we start this show, this one mic.
Yes, welcome to the end of the year show with one mic. This is going to be a doozy. You know, it's the early morning. Yeah, we flipped it on you. You know, if you're catching us live, we flipped it on you a little bit. You know, we wanted to stretch our feet a little bit here and get this thing rolling. And, you know, now we're up and going, and it's going to be a great show. We're going to be covering everything, man. You know, we have this segment we've been doing, what is beef? And, you know, when we last we were on before, we talked about the Jeff Fisher and Eric Dickerson saga, but now we got the Ryan brothers getting fired, and we got Bradshaw throwing shade at Tomlin, and so that's going to be a hot section for us. And in the site for today, we're going to, you know, we got some bowl games coming up, and we're going to make some of our picks on some of these remaining bowl games and give you a sense of we'll win the College Bowl Series, the National Championship. And so we're looking forward to that conversation. We'll have a little bit of conversation about, you know, the NBA and, you know, the fact that they were able to get the deal done, and talk a little bit about that stuff. And then we got some good stuff going on here. We're ended the year, and we want to watch, you know, our first annual hanky, that hanky. Hank will have his awards for the year. He'll lay it out. You know it's going to be crazy. Everybody got their awards, but nothing will be like the hanky. And we'll be dropping that for you for the first time here on RSG. All calls are brought to you by our good friends over there at Carbon World Health, your complete solution for fitness, health, and beauty. Go to carbonworldhealth.com to connect with Dr. Nestor Rodriguez and his staff to learn more about style medicine. Tell them that the Real Sports Guy sent you. And let me welcome to the air my good friend, my partner here on One Mic, Hank. What's up, man?
Hey, D, how you doing, man? Belated Merry Christmas. You know, hopefully, you know, all the good things that can happen going into 2017 for you and your family, man. You know, this is a time to reflect, you know, for me here in the state of Michigan, in southeast Michigan, in Ann Arbor town up the street. I'm telling you, the hype machine is on full blast. You know, it's almost like Christmas all over again around here. Just the anticipation, just waiting for kickoff this evening. You know, the official start for the bowl season for us anyway. But to all the listeners out there, I hope that you all had a very Merry Christmas. I hope you were able to enjoy your families and friends and fellowship. You know, there's been a lot going on this year, D. We got a lot to cover. But, you know, it's a blessing to be here at almost year's end, to be able to reflect on some things, to be able to clown in the early morning with my big maize and blue mug full of coffee to really get ready to hype it up and get it on.
Yeah, I'm already getting the pictures back from folks down there in Miami. I was supposed to be down there. I know you and I were supposed to be down there. We're supposed to be, but you can already see it. The machine is revving up down there. I'm seeing all this stuff. Everybody's getting hyped in all these other places, these other big ball games with the semifinal game happening. Just been a lot of good football here this bowl season. This end of the year is a time for reflection, man, as you said, and try to figure out, what the next year is going to do, and hope there's some blessings. In the time, we've lost some heroes in sports and in society, and we've had this election, but we still got a lot of hope about, we're still looking for hope and change, and whether it's in the sports world or whatever. So this is always a good time for me, because it's time for me to take stock in where I am in life, and really to sit down and appreciate those blessings. And I extend it back to you, my brother, to you and your family. I think both of us, having those families and relationships and friends are very important. So for me to be able to do this show with you, man, as I call it, a big homie, it's always good, man. It's always good. And we're going to have fun. And to do it early morning, you got the coffee. I got the little bowl of fruit and some vegetables. I'm trying to, trying to get the sexy back in 2017. Trying to figure out how to get it back down. the Biggie Smalls look. Hey, get rid of it.
I hear you.
I'm trying to get back to playing days, Margaret.
That's one thing I will tell you. People always talk about resolutions and everything, and they get to this time of the year. It's time to put the game face back on. It's time to pull the cleats out the closet, dust them suckers off, and get back out on the field. You know what? Let me tell you something. Nothing else this year didn't tell me. It showed me you as old as you feel. We lost a lot of icons this year. We lost a lot of people, to the point where it's impressive for all the wrong reasons. But, it kind of gives you an opportunity to say, life is too short, every day is a – and I'm not going to preach, but I'm going to say this. If you got the opportunity to get yourself right and to get yourself back on the field – get back on the field, whatever that field is for you. Retirement ain't nothing but a word anymore, It's if the knees freak but you can still walk, if the arm hurt but you can still throw, get on back out there on the field. You never know. You may be that hero that they start about. So, I'm saying, take next year by the horns and go after it. And don't sit on the sideline, demand playing time.
I love it. Complaining because you're not out there doing that practice. You're only like practice,
right.
Practice. You got to work on it. And yeah, I think do the things that you love to do. And find that passion. I think that's the thing that I love about doing the show. It's something that I'm passionate about, and I'm able. It's a great release, and I think I talked to too many people who haven't found that space where they just like their passion that they can feed into. They don't have that go to. Like a great player, like the Olajuwon Shake or the Kareem Skyhook. You gotta have that go to. What's your go to move? It that's gonna give you that down the stretch? And most folks don't have that go to. They haven't really identified it. They haven't worked on it. They haven't pushed on it, on what that thing is that they want to go to that gives them the passion and the space to keep getting at. But like you said, every day you're blessed to get up and have an impact, you got to do it. You put your head on the pillow, you either made the world better or you made it worse. Which side of the ledger you want to be on? And so I feel like when we do this show, we make the world a little bit better. If we give you a little bit of laughs, we give you a little bit of information, we make the world a little bit better.
That's right, but I'm gonna add this, because I know we got to get going, but I'm gonna add this to the folks that's listening out there and who's going to be listening later. You know, 2017 for the RSG and for One Mic is going to be really live. D and I have already talked about live shows, you know, doing shows on site and everything. It's already in the works. We're going to be up in Madison, Wisconsin, at least I am and a few of my cohorts. And we're going to come up there and we're going to turn it out. Hopefully we can come down here and do this thing. I'm just throwing a little sneak preview out there for you, you know. So you know, folks out there are going to be able to put a face to a name and so forth. So it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. So, you know, we can just go ahead and get started right now.
All right. So, you know, we always start the segment out, you know, we start with some positivity, but, you know, there's always beef on the streets. And I don't understand it. I try to get it. So when we last talked to you about the previous beef between Jeff Fisher and Eric Dickerson, it looked like Dickerson won because Fisher is out and we're looking for a new coach. But we got a lot of coaching changes. We got the Ryan brothers getting fired. And the killer about me, I said this, you know, if I'm Rob Ryan, I'm mad. Look, my brother was the head coach. How are we going to fire both of us?
Yeah,
you know, it's like most coaches just get fired, but I get this a package deal. And so if I'm Rob Ryan, I'm like, it's Christmas, you know, it's holiday season, you know, I got plans, and then y'all gonna mess with my money. I'm sure you'll get the rest of his money, but you get Ryan and fired, so we got the coaching carousel happening. But you know, they push Fisher out. I know you and I haven't really got a chance to go into it a lot, and people know where I stand on Fisher. When I talk about, you know, it's hard to be an NFL coach. I'm going to say that. But when you look at the number of years of losing seasons in a row that he was able to pull without going to the playoffs, I mean, where do the Rams go from here? You know, is that a job that's going to be coveted? I haven't looked at any recent reports, but, you know, what was your opinion? What do you think the Rams need to do?
Listen, we talked about this at length the last time we was on the air, and we asked the same question. I think the Rams front office heard us. I think they heard us loud and clear, because it was no sooner after we had that show he was gone. You know, the NFL is a results business, okay? And how Jeff Fisher stayed in as long as he did was questionable. You know, and so what I think the Rams messed up at was, in my opinion, they should have never let Jeff Fisher be their coach once they moved to Los Angeles. It was at that time they should have made a move, tried to make a splash, tried to get them a young, upcoming coach to be able to grow this team, or get a coach with a name for maybe a year or two to grow this team. You had John Gruden sitting right there, okay? You're going to Los Angeles. What you want, all you want to do is put names and stuff until you're able to build your team. But at least have you an established NFL coach that can sell tickets. They dropped the ball there. So now what they have to do, they got to start from scratch. They're in L.A. now. All the luster is off the roll. So now they got to start over. You know, my boy's name keep coming up, even though he done told him a million times he's not leaving Ann Arbor. You know, he done wrote a book that says, take this job and love it. Taking the University of Michigan job. So they need to leave him alone. They need to get them an established NFL coach or a college coach that wants to go to the NFL. Now, like I said, I mentioned John Gruden. That's kind of where they are right now if they're trying to sell tickets. But if they're trying to win football games, and John Gruden could probably make them a better team, okay, but he's not a long-term fix. But you got to go. But that's where they need to go to make themselves look like an NFL franchise in Los Angeles. Otherwise, it was just a wasted move.
And if you look at Gruden, I mean, he has it so good at ESPN. I mean, John Gruden got the ultimate hustle. So I mean, he's the kind of cat. He's in that power mode where, you know, he's going to keep making you feel like you want back to culture, but he really, that culture is too good. You know, when the office hours are set the way he's set and they give you the money, you like, and you never get an L on your record. You know, you can always be right. He used to hang out with these college quarterbacks. But if I think if there's any job that would probably get him out of it, it would probably be L.A. because any sense of going in the right direction sets your legacy. Like it is.
That's a glamour job. Okay,
it's a glamour job.
It's not like going to Cleveland. Okay, yeah. There's a lot of perks in coaching in Los Angeles. And don't forget, he's a coach first. All right, he's a coach first. That's why he's with these college kids and stuff, because it still gives him an opportunity to coach. He still has the itch. Now, like I said, he's not going to be no long-term coach, but hardly any coach not named Bill Belichick is. So if he were just to come to just turn that ship around just for a little bit, then guess what? His ego is now, you know, that much higher, and he could always go back to ESPN.
Now, the other one, a person I think would be great for TV and may just want to, you know, think about coaching for a while is Rex Ryan. I think Rex Ryan would be great in the studio.
Yes.
It's interesting because, you know, I have this theory about small markets like Buffalo and you have to, similar to how the Pittsburgh is done, like identify your coach, build a good kind of philosophy and system, and stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was any place I thought Rex would be okay, I thought it was going to be in Buffalo, because, you know, he's going to have a year like he had this year, but he's going to get it to a point where it's going to at least be competitive. Will he win a Super Bowl? No. But he's going to make some corrections. And in a community like Buffalo, what are your expectations? You had Marv Levy. You're blessed to have Marv Levy. He gave you a great run. But outside of that, you didn't have all these great runs. And so, I was questioning, like, what do you think you were getting first? You saw the writing on the wall. So does Rex get another job? Where do you think Rex goes? Because, I'm feeling that people are talking about college. I think Rex could be a great college coach if he wanted to. But I just think when you're coaching the pros, unless you've got that kind of in your blood, it's hard to make that move to college, get on the road. I thought it was a great transition from Lovie Smith because of his personality, kind of even keel. He can do that. I mean, I just think that – but I wish Rex is that kind of guy. But where do you see – Rex going from here?
Well, first of all, Rex Ryan, the problem with Rex Ryan is he's never had that franchise quarterback, okay? He never had a franchise quarterback. He had Sanchez when he was with the Jets, and then he had just whoever you want to call as his quarterback. And the running quarterback, we've shown, you're not 6'7", 255 pounds like a Cam Newton, and then he's been getting his bell rung. You've got to have you a quarterback. Buffalo has been having a quarterback carousel now, and he's only been there for 2 years, but that problem preceded Rex Ryan. The other thing that he has a problem with is that I know he loves his brother. That's his fraternal twin, but the man is not a good defensive coach. Okay, he's not a good defensive coordinator. Go back and look at when he was with Dallas. Go back and look at his other jobs when he was defensive coordinator. His defenses, the defenses on those teams got worse. They got worse. So I know that's his brother, but, you know, if you saw a package deal, like, he sucks. And, you know, and I know that's your brother, so he got to go with you. So that's why you saw that. You know, it's just that the writing was on the wall more for his brother than it was for him. Now, as far as where would be his next destination, it all depends on what kind of program you want to run, okay? Now, Rex Ryan is a ground and pound, but he needs a quarterback. So he's got to go somewhere to a team that, has got a decent foundation that can get it done, that's talented. I can see him in Jacksonville, personally. Okay, they've got some decent talent, provided that he gets the right guy as a defensive coordinator. All right? They've got a quarterback in place that can get it done in Bortles. That would be a good fit for him. A lot of people wouldn't even think about that, but that would be a great fit for him. You know, outside of that, I don't see him at the college level. I think he's a little bit too brash. I can't see Rex Ryan, especially if you saw the Hard Knocks when he was with the Jets. I can't see a Rex Ryan – to a, a, a kid's house, you know, and I can just see recruiters saying, this is how he going to talk to your kid. Is this what you want? Other schools doing that. I see him, you know, I'm like, oh, hell no.
And the thing about Rex, man, so this is where, with the Jets, this is where, I think he learned his lesson. With the Jets, when he had Sanchez, he was so hyper-defense that anytime they had a pick, you look at their time with the Jets, when they needed to invest in the offense, because the defense was already good.
Mm-hmm.
Every time they had a free agent, they didn't re-sign them. Look at the number of offensive free agents they didn't re-sign that helped them get
mm-hmm.
to where they needed to go. And so, but I think he was learning that lesson that he had to invest some in the offense. If you look at kind of what he tried to do in Buffalo, he realized that he had to be more of a balanced coach. Because I think Sanchez gave him his best chance, but he had to help build Sanchez. And
right.
He didn't continue to give him the weapons around. If you look at Sanchez's last year or two, I mean, if you look at when he made the AFC run and look at the players he was playing with, and then look at the group that he played with towards the end, it wasn't even the same. I mean, they had divested in their offense because they got so hyper-invested in the defense. And I think he corrected that. You're right. If he's going to coach again, it's going to be in a market like Jacksonville. Looks like Coughlin might be returned to the scene of the crime. If I'm Jacksonville,
mm-hmm.
Coughlin, the kind of coach I would probably take now, a more mature Coughlin, right, in life, knowing how to balance Super Bowl winning, I think he would be really good down there in Jacksonville. On the flip side of the beef conversation, I don't know what's up with Terry Bradshaw. You know, I'm a Steelers fan, love the Steelers fan, loved it with Bradshaw. But these shots at Tomlin were just ridiculous. And so
mm-hmm.
for those of you who didn't really have a chance to hear, you know, Terry Bradshaw was doing an interview, and conversation came up about Mike Tomlin, and he basically said, I don't know what he does. I'm not sure. I don't see what he does. Whenever I think of great coaches, I don't think of him. Basically said that he's more like a cheerleader. And, you know, really disparaging remarks for somebody who is, you know, I went back and looked at, like, even all-time, like, records and percentages. And Tomlin, you know, you think about his playoff victories, you think about his record, stacks up against however you want to rank the top quarterbacks, I mean, top coaches, he ranks well. The only person in his current era that's probably ahead of him is Belichick in a lot of different ways. So, you know, when you talk about Andy Reid and folks like this or Mike McCarthy, Tomlin's record stands up against them is better than them in many respects. What's your response? What's your reaction to the comment?
I got to be careful when you hear stuff like that because you don't want to automatically play the race card. But when you look at Mike Tomlin's record, compare it to Bill Cowher, okay? Compare his first 4 years with the Steelers to Chuck Knoll's, all right? Before the Super Bowl years, okay? And then afterwards, when all those Hall of Famers retired. Okay, the man's a good coach, okay? The Steelers are a team. They are a playoff contender every year. They've got a handful of players that you could deem as superstars. But the rest of that team is just blood and guts and just will come and bust you in the mouth. They always say that a team takes on the personality of their coach. Well, you know that the Pittsburgh Steelers are a very tough team. Everybody knows they're not a soft team, and you're in for a dogfight when you got to play that team. And again, that team is a perennial playoff contending team, a Super Bowl contending team, and, you know, it's an insult. That's why I say I got to be careful. I don't know what Terry Bradshaw is coming on this, but it's an insult when you see a team that is good every year. Now, see, he's a difference from what we started the show talking about, these coaches that don't ever win but keep their jobs. Here's a coach that wins on a consistent basis, okay? And you can point to the years when they didn't win to significant injuries to key players. But yet and still, they're always in the hunt in that division every year. That's an insult to that coach. It's unprofessional, as Mike Tomlin said. And, you know, Terry Bradshaw should offer an apology. You know, when the facts don't add up, but I guess in this world, the facts don't have to add up as long as you get pressed. But that's an insult to that coach. He's one of the best coaches in the NFL. Go check out the numbers, all right, bar none. To call him a rah-rah coach and he's not very good, I mean, really? I mean, you just made an ass out of yourself with that statement, and I mean that. Because that, you know, I'm not a big Pittsburgh Steelers fan, but I respect what Mike Tomlin has done with that team, okay? I respect what he's done with the team, and the fact that that team and the passion for that team is so strong, and they know every year what that expectation is. And for anybody to come out there and say something like that, especially when he's with the Steeler Nation, you know, and see that that team is doing well, that's an insult, and it was a very ignorant statement to make.
And you got to talk about it. He did this transitioning out the bus, transitioning a Polamalu. So you're changing the structure, the leadership of your team. And he's only had 2-8-8 seasons. Everything else is above that. He's had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 seasons with 10 or more wins. I mean, you can't even. It's like, what are you talking about? Just like you said, like you speak without facts. And what people fail to realize, there's a couple of good things about leadership: is hiring your team and maintaining your team. How do you get people through transition? He had that crazy period with Ben. Where Ben had some personal stuff going on. Offensive transitioning out. He had to find coaches. He's set a tone, the way they approach, the excellence. You know, being a great head coach, I mean, I think Belichick is an example of this. What Belichick does, he's probably always done. People give him so much credit, but a lot of things that he does is he's invested a lot in his assistant coaches. If you look at Belichick and his philosophy, he really focuses on teaching. A lot of it is he's delegating a lot of stuff. He's working on a strategy, but and same thing with Saban. They invest so much in this because they understand the importance of the position coach. So all of that, when you look at how you organize your team as well as lead it, Tomlin coming in at 35 years old, he only 44 now. He got 102 wins and 57 losses. But if that was somebody else, if that was Andy Reid, people would be talking about he's one of the greatest of all time. If that was Mike McCarthy, he's talking about one of the greatest of all time. So it's crazy that folks are allowed to just get the mic like that, but then Tomlin just eviscerates him. What do I know? I grew up with Dallas Cowboys, specifically Hollywood Henderson. I said, "Oh, he shots fired." Tomlin was hitting with some subtle jab. That was like a Drake like jab on him.
That's what
Ivy League like education will get for you. I mean, when you went to William and Mary, that's what that'll get you.
Mm-hmm.
Get you. You start messing with him. He takes some shots on you. You know, and then he just looked. He just kind of stopped and looked at the camera. I said, "Oh man, go get him, man. Go get him."
You know what? He's a very humble guy off that field, and I got a lot of respect for him. And if you get a chance, there's an ESPN did a spot on Mike Tomlin and his humble beginnings. You know,
yes.
I mean, when you look at him, you would think he would be some sort of cocky SOB that you should be concerned with. But he is a very humble, very smart guy. And like I said before, I'm not a big Pittsburgh Steelers fan, but I got a lot of respect for that organization. I got a heck of a lot of respect for that coach. And if for any reason you like the Pittsburgh Steelers, it is because of their head coach.
Well, hey, we just get hot here. You listening to One Mike with Devon and Hank. Coming up later on in the show, the Hankies. We releasing it, y'all. Yeah, it's been you've been waiting for it. You knew Hank was gonna have it. We gonna release it, drop a little for you, but we're going to take a little musical break here, take a breather. When we come back, we're going to make some bold picks.
Nothing can stop me. I'm all the way up. All the way up. All the way up. I'm all the way up.
what you want, I got what you need. Shorty, what you want, I got what you need. Shorty, what you want, I got what you need.
I'm all the way up. I'm all the way up. I'm all the way up. All the way up. Nothing can stop me. I'm all the way up.
For my niggas with Bentley coupes and Rolexes. Kicked the bitch out the room and gave her no breakfast. Had to stash the jewels, these bitches so reckless. Keep on, so cruise, I'm talking naughty uptown, showing off a new thing. Couldn't take it all, so I gave her un ching. She called me top shot, so yeah, I keep a few tings. Champion sound, yeah, I got a few rings. And I'm all the way up. And you can stay up. And if you ask anybody where I live, they point to the hills and say, go all the way up. Go all the way up. I'm all the way up. I'm all the way up. Nothing can stop me. I'm all the way up.
Just left a big house to a bigger house. Ain't have a girlfriend, but the bitch is out. Chanel Croc back. Ain't even out with the gold chains, Himalayan broken cocaine, lit it up. Pop, I hit him up, I'm talking color money, purple yin and blue germ. I got brown lira, I ain't talking about raw switch. I'm not going Viagra. That means I'm on the way up, and you can stay up. P.O. say I can't get high, hop in the helicopter, Uber said, go on the way up.
All right, welcome back to One Mic with Devon and Hank. It's been an incredible first start to our end of the year 2016 show. I want to remind you that all hosts and callers are brought to you by Carbon Real Health, your complete solution for fitness, health, and beauty. Go to carbonworldhealth.com to connect with Dr. Nestor Rodriguez and his staff to learn more about lifestyle medicine. Tell them that the Real Sports Guys sent you. We're back. Again, this is our 2017 headline show, our 2016 and review show. We just dipped our toe in. We spent the first segment hitting you with the, you know, what's beef. If you got a chance to look, you can always catch us on iTunes. You can catch us on Stitcher. You got the podcast stuff, and you want to just plug in, give us a review, help us build the show. We love it to get that great feedback from our listeners. We're going to keep it going. We take it to another level on 217. So we got the bowl stuff coming on, man. We got bowl games. We got a lot of stuff coming up. And so I want to hear just a couple of bowl games with you, Hank, to kind of get your sense of them. I know we have a long list down here, but I'm probably going to just pick a couple here and then get into our picks for the semifinals and the final four. So let me start with, since we got kind of this Big Ten feel and SEC kind of thing going on, we got Nebraska, we got Tennessee playing in the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl. Down there in Nashville, who do you have in that game between Tennessee and Nebraska? Tennessee was really the darling pick early in the season. People thought that they had a good chance of getting that Final Four. They had some hiccups down the stretch. They got Josh Dobbs at the quarterback position that hasn't quite realized. I think his potential in the senior year has a lot of skill in there. And then you got Nebraska, and they've kind of been slowly putting their program together, but they've had some hiccups along the way, trying to get back to their form as a national power. So who are you looking at for this game?
Well, let me explain my picks this way. When I look at these teams now, you kind of got to throw – a regular season out the window, all right? Because with the whole playoff thing, a lot of these teams now come down to these bowl games. and it's just another game, and they look at it as an exhibition, while other teams and their coaching staffs look at them as opportunities to build their program. With that being said, I'm looking at a game that's being played in Tennessee, in Tennessee's backyard. I don't anticipate them really showing up. You know, I think even on the biggest stage, we saw Tennessee kind of flounder. I think Nebraska comes in here, and I think that they come here motivated, trying to build this program, because I think they got a chance for next season in that Big Ten West, and I think they put a stomping on Tennessee. I think Tennessee sleepwalks through this game, and I think Nebraska wins this one by at least 10 points.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, I think one thing that Nebraska, they can get around on you. And when they put good games together this year, they can really make you pay a little bit. And you're right. You know, one thing about the bowl thing, like you said, about different teams, but players look at it differently. Like, when you go in a bowl game, a lot of times in your mind, you think about yourself getting on a plane, right? You're going to go to a warm place. You're going to get all those good baggies that they give you, the backpack and get all that stuff. But when it's like you got to get on a bus and ride to a town that you probably have been to a couple of times and hung out like that year, you know, that kind of throws you off a little bit. And these are young folks. It ain't really like I'm leaving home. So you're right. You don't know what people are thinking about in their mind. And Tennessee has been finicky. I mean, some games they've been, like, out of this world. And it tells me that they haven't quite yet built all the leadership components in their team to keep everybody focused. I think Josh is an incredible young man. This is a guy that is going to be CEO of somebody's company. He might be a presidential candidate. I mean, he's that smart, that bright, engineering student. But it seems like they're still trying to build their identity as a program. And I think Nebraska is probably in the second, third year of that process where I think they're really trying to get back to what they're going. And so anytime you get on that plane and travel somebody, it's like a business trip, you're right. I got Nebraska winning this one down there in Nashville. Some good food down there too, so do your thing.
And
tonight, I'm already getting the calls from folks down there in Miami, Hard Rock Stadium, Miami Gardens, Florida. It's already going on. We got Pitbull going to be playing tomorrow night. His party going to be tomorrow night. Everybody's in Miami right now for this one. And you know, as your boy would say, nobody's got it better than us. Nobody. Now, I don't even need to ask you who you think going to win. See, this we got to be – because this is going to be a good game. You got Florida State, you got Cook, you got Michigan. You got two teams who really believe they were headed towards this championship run. Let's approach this differently. What are the keys to victory? Rather than who's going to win, what's the keys to victory for both teams, Michigan and Florida State?
When I look at this game, all right, I'm looking at two teams that are trending upward. But I look at a Michigan team that's got all of these seniors, all of this, Jim Harbaugh has said that they were responsible for the resurgence and the rebirth of Michigan football. How does these young men want to go out? I don't think they were very happy with their overall performance against Ohio State, and they got something to prove. Now, I take nothing away from Jimbo Fisher and Dalvin Cook. But if that game gets a little bit lopsided, I'm looking for Florida State to fold up the tents, okay? Because, again, I know they talk a good game, but you look at Florida State's bowl record in the last couple of years, all right? 2 years ago, they had a chance to play for the national championship game and didn't show up. And last year, they didn't show up either, all right? They got a freshman quarterback. Now, again, it's a good game on paper, all right? And I think that the motivation is the whole Jim Harbaugh factor. But those kids don't care about Jim Harbaugh, okay? Otherwise, they'd have come to Michigan. So my feeling here is that I think that for maybe a half, it's going to be a very good game. If Michigan allows Florida State to stay in it, then it's going to be a four-quarter game. But if this game gets out of hand anywhere, okay, then I think it's going to be a runaway. Okay, now that's the way I look at it. I think the keys are those seniors, and I know Jimmy's going to have those seniors motivated to finish strong, okay? And you have to ask yourself for Florida State again, three losses, what have they got to prove? Even though Jimbo Fisher's going to try to get them ready, this is not where they want to be, all right? So it's going to be interesting to see. They're a young team. Will they get frustrated easy? They're at home, okay? Tallahassee, it's not they probably flew, but they could have took the bus. But my point is, again, the motivation factor and what happens in this game early. And if this game gets out of hand early, it's going to get ugly.
So, yeah, what I look at is that, yeah, they have to establish Cook in the running game and to give Fuqua a little bit more, a little bit more of a opportunity in the passing game. You know, their defense has to show up for them to really, put some pressure on Michigan. And they got the skill players to do it. You know, a lot of it, they're relying on a young quarterback. Michigan and with Brown and that defensive coordinator, they have the ability to really make young quarterbacks pay, which, you know, if you look at the younger quarterbacks they played against this year, they really put the pressure on them. And they'll come after them. And then Michigan's got to run the football effectively.
Right.
And I think that, where Wilton Spates, in what I call quarterback games, haven't come up big. Iowa was a quarterback game. Ohio State game was a quarterback game where he's got to make one or two plays. What I do, and this is what I think, when you look at these bowl games, people have to, the way that they work this period is they spend a lot of time working with their young people in the first couple of weeks. So coaches will be traveling. And this is an opportunity for them to work with their redshirt freshmen, Like, people don't get a lot of time. It's almost like a preseason where they're doing a lot of that before they even put the game plan in. And I think this is where Harbaugh really gets good. This is where I think people like Urban Meyer and these coaches separate themselves, is that while they're preparing for a bowl game, they're also building for the next season. They're getting people time, minutes. They're doing instruction. They're working on things and building depth. And I also think that this is where quarterback play will continue to grow for them in Michigan, that I think Harbaugh would really – you're going to see some growth in this period in a way that you don't see in a lot of teams. This is where it separates, like, your really good assistant coaches and things like this. And I think this is where Harbaugh is probably at his best. This is where his teaching and all that stuff is going to come in. You know, is Jimbo doing that? Is he managing egos of folks who are ready to go to the league? You know, you got some of these kids who didn't play. Dalvin Cook, thinking more about his injuries. So it's going to be a good game. I got a feeling that it's going to come down to fourth quarter. I don't know if it's going to be a blowout. I just don't. I think that both these coaches are going to have these players motivated. But I think it's going to come down. I think if they pull away, it'll be sometime early fourth quarter. But it'll be a really good game going on. It sounds like we both going to take Michigan. We got to put an asterisk by a little homer for us. We got LSU and we got Louisville. We got one team that benefited from our information being shared by another team, and then we got a down-home country coach who finally got his love fest job. LSU Louisville. We got the Heisman Trophy candidate coming off his Heisman Trophy run, and now he's coming in. He's facing against this Tiger defense. Who do you got there? The Buffalo Wings Citrus Bowl. Man, that pregame meal must have been – Buffalo Wild Wings was sponsoring that. That pregame meal must have been off the chain.
You know it was. You know it was. Probably not so much for the kids at LSU because they want that Cajun food. They're probably eating that hot stuff. But I'm going to tell you, this game ain't going to be close. Okay? This game is not going to be close. LSU is going to put a foot in Louisville's backside. And let me tell you why. They got their coach, okay? This is Ed Orgeron. He's been begging for somebody to hire him. USC messed up, okay? Yep. LSU didn't make a mistake. This man, his first bowl game, you kidding me? And then you just watched the way LSU slept walk through the last few games of the regular season. This team ain't motivated, okay? Lamar Jackson, that's it. So goes Lamar Jackson, so goes that offense, all right? Oh, by the way, LSU has got one of the top defenses in the nation, all right?
Yep.
And him running around don't mean nothing to them, okay? Because you got cats on that defensive side that can run just like him, all right?
Yep.
So this game is not going to be close. And then Orgeron has figured out a way to generate some offense, okay? But we've seen that LSU's defense, Louisville's defense has disappeared sometimes, and especially in the last few games of the year. Now,
yes,
they can game plan all they want to, but Petrino's going to try to showcase the Heisman Trophy winner, and that boy going to get hurt. This game is going to be a blowout. It's going to be a blowout early. I think LSU rolls in this one.
Yep, it's a game that's coming up here in a little bit, I'm with LSU. I think, you know, their defense has been incredible down the stretch. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, one thing you can't do is outrun them. I think having the pressure of the coaching search off their back, having a few weeks, again, to build for next year and train for this one, I think you're going to be seeing the beginning of a really strong 2012 LSU team, building its identity. I think in some ways, Leonard Fournette not playing is actually good for their team because they can immediately transition. You know they're the kind of team that's still loaded at running back. And so now you're already going to see the next Leonard Fournette is already going to have an opportunity to showcase before next year. So they're going to be hyped. This is an opportunity to get preseason, award consideration for some of these young folks. So there's a lot of motivation. And I think, in fact, not having Fournette there is going to allow them to be much more complete in terms of their approach on offense. Gave them all this time to prepare without him I think, going to be a benefit to LSU. I think you're going to see the kind of LSU team that everybody has been waiting to see. So I'm with you on that. We got on January 2nd, we got Florida against Iowa. This is an interesting game, man. You got Ferentz and you got McElvain. You got two coaches who are constantly in this weird spot. Teams play pretty solid. Florida has a dynamic defense, probably some of the best defensive backs in terms of the country, in terms of a defense. Iowa's just always solid. In some ways, I like to call Ferentz is like, 9-4. No, it's 7-4. He's always going to win enough games to keep it, and every once in a while get 11 wins. But both these teams are going to be – it's going to be interesting. And the Big Ten team, a number of times in the Outback Bowl, has really fared well. So it's going to be interesting to see how this one – I'm going to go with Iowa. And the reason why I'm going to Iowa is that I think Iowa's Iowa's defense is not where Florida's defense is, but Florida's offense isn't something I'm scared about. But Iowa has a strong enough offense. I think they can move. It's going to be low scoring, my feeling, but I think Iowa will – this will be one of those games that Raymond James that will, end in a field goal. It's going to be that kind of – but it's going to be hard hitting. It's going to be a really good – for people who love football, it's going to be a good game to watch.
This game – is going to be the snooze bowl, okay? This is the game, if you didn't sleep at all for New Year's, going into New Year's, the second day of New Year's, but you've been watching football all day long and you just can't sleep, turn this game on. You'll get you a nice 3-hour rest, okay? This game is going to be like a Rockettes line. 1, 2, 3, kick. 1, 2, 3, kick. This game might go into overtime at 0-0. All right? There's nothing dynamic about neither one of these teams' offenses. They both got decent defenses, okay? And if Iowa is in a game and they're motivated, you may not score on them. And same thing with Florida. The one thing about Florida, I will say, and with McElvain being coached, again, can this team be motivated at home playing in Florida again against another Big Ten team, okay, in Florida? If they're a motivated team, then you don't have nothing to watch. All right? It's like you said, it's going to come down to a field goal in overtime. Okay? The game might be 3-2. You're right. It's going to be extremely low scoring. You're not going to see a whole lot of drives. I don't anticipate. I think that in a game that's that close, yeah, I'm going to give Iowa the edge because I have not seen anything from Florida's offense to say that, yeah, they're going to be able to put points up on that team. And they're both going to be hitting really hard. So, yeah, it's a toss-up, but being from Big Ten country, I will say I'll take Iowa 9-6.
All right. And so we're going to take two more bowl games before we get to the Final Four. One, I have to do this because as a Western Michigan alum, I want you to weigh in on this. And then I got the Wisconsin piece on here, and I don't know, we didn't put anything on it. They're down in the Cotton Bowl. Tickets are going for $5. You can still get in. But I think it's going to be a good game. Wisconsin is, you know, one of the top defenses in the country. You know, the question is, are they going to get the quarterback play that they need to move it on Western Michigan? Western Michigan got explosive players on their squad. They're looking to prove something. They've been asking for this kind of, you know, opportunity to be in this bowl game. So they'd be excited. Down in Dallas, in Jerry's house, who you got?
Okay. So let me try to break this game down as analytically as I can and as unbiased as I can. So we know that with Wisconsin, you've got that amazing defense, and then you've got that killer running game, okay? Western Michigan is going to have to be able to stop Wisconsin's run game. They're going to have to be able to stop the run game. When I watched the MAC championship game, I was very concerned about, and I don't know if the team was motivated or tight or whatever, but they were able to move the ball on Western Michigan's defense. That concerns me. Secondly, you know, you take nothing away from Wisconsin's defense, one of the top defenses in the nation. However, we saw Penn State hang some points on that defense. All right? So what this is going to come down to is Wisconsin's defense against Western Michigan's offense and Corey Davis, one of the most underrated wide receiver prospects in the nation. This boy is bad. I've watched him play.
Yeah.
He's amazing. Plus his name is kind of neat too, Davis. But I digress.
Yeah.
So anyway, okay, so now you want me to make a pick, okay? I think that if this is a close one down the stretch and Western has the ball, they're going to pull the upset. They're going to be sky high. They're going to be sky high. All right? My heart won't let me pick against the Broncos. So row the boat.
and you know my heart can't let me pick you really fucky. You know, I think everything you said is right on. And I think what Wisconsin's ability to – at times, pass on first down, you know, get the ball to, you know, either PV on the jet sweep or get him out in space to kind of keep Western Michigan honest and then allowing them to run the football will be important. And then another thing is, can Wisconsin defense get some turnovers? They're really good in terms of getting turnovers. And so if they can, you know, lock down Davis. They got great cornerbacks. They got great defense. And take that as a challenge and take that option away. I think it's going to be a good game. I think the reason why it's going to be close is because Wisconsin's passing game hasn't matured. Now, the question is, again, you know, what they've been able to do here over the break to build on that, to get better in that area will be the key. Because I think they've allowed teams to stay in because of their inability. I mean, Ohio State game they lost because they just couldn't pass enough to get first downs, like to keep them honest, enough balance. And so if they're able to improve on some of that in this interim period where you can really work on those things, that makes it really tough for Western. Because if they're able to get the ball to Jazz, PV, and folks in space where they can run, now you can't put as many people in the box. They're going to run on you. So it's going to be interesting. Both well-coached teams, great opportunity for Western Michigan put herself on the national scene, it's going to be a barn burn. So then we're going to go to the Rose Bowl, presented by Northwestern Mutual, USC and Penn State. Everybody's been tooting that USC horn. Penn State was like, we want ours, we want our recognition. Now, Big Ten teams have traveled out west, got a piece of that Hollywood life, out there eating, and they get to that game and get hoodwinked. Took against Penn State, man, but I'm feeling like USC, the Trojans, they're going to be playing that fight. They're the one team. Like, when you talk about playing in their own backyard, they're the one team who plays well in their own backyard. Anytime they're playing out there near Southern California, Snoop Dogg on the sidelines. And I like Penn State. I think they can do it there, but USC seems to always put on a Big Ten team out there. What say you?
You know what? I agree with that, but I will tell you what I have seen from this Penn State team. You know, the win against Ohio State wasn't a fluke. That James Franklin has finally put his mark on this team, okay? And it's taken him a while. He's had to kind of go through some stuff. I think that the national writers missed the boat, and I think because of the stink that's still on this Penn State program with the whole Jerry Sandusky thing, James Franklin did an amazing job this year. He did an amazing job this year. For him to keep that team together after all of that, after the Michigan game, they was ready to throw him out of Pennsylvania, okay? Much less College Station, the whole state. He was a mistake. They were talking about who was going to be their next coach. He turned around. Not only did he beat Ohio State, win the Big Ten championship. I mean, dominating a Wisconsin team that, you know, they were blowing their doors off. Wisconsin was. And they came all the way back, won that game. Okay, he should have been a national coach of the year. But again, I think there's such a stigma on the Penn State program. Now, with that being said, okay, Saquon Barkley is one of the baddest backs you will ever see. He should be one of the Heisman candidates going into next year. That boy is, keep an eye on him, all right? He is one of the baddest running backs you will ever see. Trace McSorley was able to do what he was going to do because you had to account for Saquon Barkley. Okay? Mm-hmm. He is amazing. With that being said, look here. Their defense has played the best this year. All right? They played Michigan. They played Ohio State. They played Wisconsin. Okay? In those games, they're 2-1. They're 2-1, and they're playing their best football when it counts the most. I think, again, a fired up with a Penn State team with a fiery coach. Okay, I think that they're going to be ready to play. I think they upset USC at the Rose Bowl. I'm taking Penn State. I'm taking Penn State. I think the fact that they won the Big Ten championship got something to prove. I think that that's one team that they're going to be very entertaining to watch. It's going to be a very entertaining game. I think they pull it off, though.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that I think you. You know, talked about is that I think Franklin is again created an identity and reestablished an identity for that program. In some ways, played a role in kind of really pushing them back past a lot of that stuff that's kind of been keeping them in off the national scene because of all the other stuff. You know, I think he's been able to the way he leads. The way he represents himself, he's clearly helped to take them past, that stench you said that's on the program. And, you know, many of these kids, none of these kids had anything to do with it. None of these coaches had anything to do with it. I mean, the university hasn't helped with some of the things they've done this year to bring it back up there. But he's kind of kept those kids focused and really helped. And when you think about USC, I mean, I think USC has just been, you know, they kind of been slowly, after taking it on the chin early against Alabama, they kind of been slowly kind of working themselves back in and getting their defense and just, you know, switch their quarterback to kind of help to get that offense. You know, they got talent on that squad. And so it's obviously a home field advantage for them. But I think you do. I mean, you make some really good points about Penn State can do. I just think that Snoop Dogg effect. You know, I think the Big Ten is going to be on a positive side of wins for the bowl season, reflecting what they've done. But this might be one bowl game that either close or whatever is going to be. You know, it's like playing on their home field. It's going to be. They're going to be jacked. You know, but if Penn State wins, I'm not going to be surprised. All right, so we're moving into this bowl series, playoff series. Let's start with Washington and Alabama playing in the Fiesta Bowl, the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl. We got Urban Meyer. We got Dabo Sweeney. I call him the college football coach's line stepper, always stepping over lines with some of the comments he's saying. But you got Clemson. You got Deshaun feels like he was slighted on the Heisman from what they said. That's what the word on the street is. You know, Ohio State, everybody said they cheated to get there. But they got something to prove. Like, they're coming out of that Michigan game. You know, people are like, where's the offense? I think this could be a good game, man. I think Urban gets him. I think Ohio State gets Clemson. Because they so young, again, you're talking about coaches that do a lot with this break time, and I think Urban knows how to improve a team dramatically in periods like this and grow them. I think their offense is going to be much better. If they win a national championship because this period right here that Urban used to self-scout, to really think about how he can build some more explosiveness into the offense and really take advantage of JT, I think Ohio State gets Clemson.
Well, I'm glad you think that. But as Lee Corso says, not so fast, my friend.
I knew you were going to come back.
I got a few points to make. So anyway, I look at this Ohio State team, and yeah, they're very young. Michigan abused their offensive line, absolutely abused them, okay? Even though no holding penalties was called against that offensive line, but we won't go back into that. Let's go back to the last time Ohio State was in the playoffs. Okay? They had a big
don't
six.
Don't have facts to back this up.
Hey, don't throw me off now. I'm on the roll. Hey, don't throw me off now. I'm going to tell you, the last time they won, they had the big quarterback in Cardale Jones. They had the rookie of the year, in my opinion, in the NFL this year, Zeke Elliott, and maybe even the MVP, okay, in that backfield. All right, the one thing that Cardale Jones could do that I don't have confidence that JT Barrett can do is stretch the field. I don't have any confidence he can do that. And the fact was that they were effective that way because – Cardale was hard to bring down. He was an accurate deep passer, and Zeke Elliott had lanes to run, okay? And they had that defense, which was out of this world. Now, with that, I don't see that same dynamic this year with this Ohio State team, okay? I also saw that you can get JT Barrett rattled, plus if you hit him a few times, okay, which I think Clemson's going to be able to do. I still don't have enough confidence in that Ohio State offensive line. I've seen it, okay, and I've seen what can happen to it. If you get you a solid refereeing crew, that's going to – well, let me get back to what I want to talk about. Anyway, on the other side of the ball with Clemson, okay, you got a Heisman Trophy candidate. You also have a team and a coaching staff that tasted the playoff last year and walked off that field and thought they were the best team but did not win the championship. That goes a long way for them to get back this year. Okay, did they look good? Should they have lost a couple more games? Sure. But that being said, this is another veteran team, okay? Although they lost a lot of players, they still have their quarterback. They still have their offense, okay? They beat one of the most dynamic players this year in Lamar Jackson. They've gone through it. And oh, by the way, history is not on Ohio State's side when they play Clemson. So I know Ohio State is a 3-point favorite, but I'm taking Clemson to win this one because I wouldn't take Ohio State if they was playing ISIS.
His bias is coming out. My goodness. I'm trying to be, I was trying to be objective in this. I had those same feelings about how things, but I had to be objective in this thing. And I will give you
this. Object to Ohio State.
Yes, we have the Chick-fil-A. We ain't let nobody into our restaurant, Peach Bowl, against Washington and Alabama, where Washington plays Alabama. You know, Washington is the unknown in the sense that they're known, but people have thrown so much shade on the Pac-12 that I don't think people realize how good Washington is on both sides of the ball. And then they're up against Alabama. Now, one thing I said about Alabama, people, and it's funny because I heard a guy on Paul Feinbaum's show say this. He's actually an Ohio State fan, but he was saying it in some crazy way that he really missed his point. The point that I think is very important is that when you look at Alabama's defensive backfield, if there's a place where you can, I believe, get them is you can stretch them over the top. And if you got a versatile enough passing game, you can have balance against them. And I think Washington has it. But Washington has shown that they've been pretty physical on both sides of the ball. So it's going to be interesting whether or not, you know, the bull constrictor method of Alabama, where they kind of squeeze you and make you play in this box where the pressure forces you to make a mistake. And you can create things where you can actually play them in space a little bit. I think, you know, if you're going to get Saban, this is where you get Saban. You don't get Saban on the next week. If you don't get Saban, it's kind of like getting him the first weekend of the NCAA playoffs, of the March Madness. You get somebody that first weekend, this is the time I think you're going to be able to, if you're going to get Saban, it's either you get him because you can throw enough wrinkles into it. But I think, you know, I think Alabama, I think this coin game is closer than people think. But I think Alabama squeaks it out. I think it's like one of those, you know, 28-21 type of games where it kind of still puts Washington back on the map, that they're heading the right direction. But Alabama squeaks it out with some type of defensive touchdown. The thing that I get nervous about Alabama is that a lot of their wins have been depending on special teams and defensive touchdowns. And I know you can, but those things don't come every day. Like if you're dependent on defense and special teams touchdowns as a bulk part of your strategy, you know, a lot of times it gets really good disciplined teams. I mean, you get team games like this where if people don't turn the ball over, then what do you do? So that's the part that worries me for them against Washington. But I think Alabama might squeak this one out.
You know, if you can't go against Alabama, all right? You don't have enough holes that you see with that team to say, okay, this is why Washington is going to beat them. However, when you look at the Washington team, okay, first of all, their coach, Peterson, he's the coach that came from Boise State. You're going to see something you probably haven't seen all season from that Washington offense, all right? They have a very stout defense, too. They got a very stout defense. And I don't have a whole lot of confidence in Alabama's offense. Okay, if you recall the LSU game, that was a one possession game basically. All right, LSU held that team. LSU just flat out could not score. Well, Washington can score. So what you have to watch with this, if Washington can hold Alabama down offensively, they're going to score on that defense. They're going to score on Alabama's defense. They've got a lot of talent, but don't get it twisted. Peterson, their coach, is probably one of the most dynamic offensive minds of Washington's coach that you'll ever see. Go back to Boise State, Oklahoma, in the Orange Bowl. What bowl was that? I can't remember the bowl game, but it was a BCS bowl game. But they upset Oklahoma, okay? He's got more talent than he had on that Boise State team, okay?
Yeah.
Don't be surprised. I'm telling you right now, it's hard to pick against Alabama, but don't be surprised if this isn't the upset of the year. A close game in the fourth quarter obviously favors Alabama. But if, for whatever reason, Washington has the lead going into the fourth quarter, I don't think they relinquished that. Don't be surprised. I'm telling you here first. Don't be surprised if 14-point underdog Washington upsets the mighty Nick Sabans of Alabama.
And I'm going to put it like this. I'm picking Washington to win this game. I'm going to say, because Peterson is one of those big game coaches that constantly comes up in big games.
Yes, like, he does.
He's a big game coach that just, and he gets, I mean, he's used to getting an underdog team to believe they can go up against Goliath. And he's been telling them they have been disrespected all year. And they've been putting drummings on some people. I'm gonna go with Washington. I switched it up.
Talked you into it. See, I've been thinking that this whole time. I'm like, I watched this team. See, I'm one of those college football geeks that watch Pac-12 after dark. You know,
yes.
I watch teams, and this team looks eerily similar to the 1991 team that had the shared national championship when they had what's that one defensive lineman they had? Eatman or Edelman or something like that.
Yeah.
We know. Okay. Y'all look it up. Anyway, but my point is, they've got a solid defense, but they've got a very prolific offense. Okay, and they create turnovers on the defensive side. Just watch the Pac-12 championship games. Watch what they did to Colorado. But this team has what they have what it takes. Okay, they're the most disrespected team of the four. Okay, everybody's saying Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. And Washington. Watch out for this team, and don't be surprised if they don't pull this upset. I'm with you. I think I'm going to go with Washington. I think I've talked myself into it. I'm looking for that upset.
All right, so then we got the national championship. That means I got Washington against Ohio State. You got Washington against Clemson. Who you got?
I promise you, the game, Washington against Clemson, is going to be an entertaining game, and it's going to be a high-scoring affair, okay? I think that in this game that Deshaun Watson makes the play that puts him over the top, and in a high-scoring game, I think Clemson beats Washington something like 35-31, where they score a touchdown on the end and win the national championship.
And this is where I say, okay, Washington against Ohio State, and because the national dialogue continues to try to bash, you know, Big Ten success, because Ohio State is usually the thorn that doesn't hold up the end of the deal. The Big Ten will win a lot of these games, and then Ohio State will lose against Washington in the championship. And then people will question whether or not the Big Ten was the best conference. I already see it. So I take Peterson winning the championship, bringing Washington back on the map as a powerhouse in football. That would be how I would, if I go this route. So we got Washington.
I like your pick, though. I like your pick. I don't have that much confidence in Washington. But I like that pick.
Well, this is good. Well, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back for the historic unveiling of the hanky. All right. Welcome to One Backfield, One Mic with Devon and Hank. And so right now, we're going to unveil the inaugural, the Hanky. I'm going to give the floor to my booth mate, Hank Davis, who will lay out his awards for the year. And this is certainly going to be entertaining. Hank.
All right. So listen. Now, before I start these, I got to give y'all a little something. Okay, so you don't think it's going to be the same old award show, okay, or that you've heard before. Okay? And Steve Entman, by the way, was the defensive lineman from Washington that I was thinking about from 1991. Had to look that up for you. Don't like to leave you misinformed. But anyway, so let me explain something to you about the Hankies. All right? This isn't going to be your garden variety rookie of the year, most improved player, player of the year crap. We don't do that with the Hankies. Okay? This has been a long sports year. There are some things that we need to recognize. You know, most of the time the Hankies are more a team event because I'm a team player. I don't think that there's no I in team. So there's a lot of team recognition that you'll see. Oh, there may be some individual awards. But understand that for you to see the fullness of this sports year, we have to recognize some things that sometimes fly under the radar or some things that we may have forgotten or, oh, yeah. So that's what the Hankies are going to recognize, okay? I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time and bore you with all of the candidates, all the finalists. You don't care. They lost, okay? You want to know who won the Hanky, not who finished third, okay? So we're not going to bore you with who the finalists are. I'm going to tell you who won the award, and I'm going to explain the categories to you before I reward the first annual Hanky of 2016. So for this first go-round, we have 10 categories of the Hankies, okay? All categories made up by the Hanky Committee, you know, comprised of Hank Davis and associates. So we want to make sure that you understand these categories before we award the Hanky. So the first Hanky of 2016 is in the Nationwide is on Your Side category. And this is the person at the beginning of the year that we got sick of seeing but was glad to see leave, even though they left on a horse that maybe they shouldn't have got on, but that's debatable. So the Nationwide is on Your Side category Hanky goes to Peyton Manning, walking off into the sunset at the beginning of this year with the Denver Broncos, winning his Super Bowl in all of his glory on his back. The second Hanky that's going to be awarded is in the category of the election is rigged, I won the popular vote category. Now, this category is about the team, and this is the team category, because this is where it was a done deal. Everybody thought this team was going to win. Everybody crowned this team champion before they played. They had all of their alumni. They had all of their dignitaries there. Everybody had the party going. And, oh, by the way, something happened. It didn't happen the way you thought it was going to happen. And, oops, in the last seconds of the game, you were second place. And that award goes to the North Carolina Tar Heel basketball team. And if you recall that time, they had team television stations. I happened to be watching the North Carolina station, not even realizing it. Okay, there was Jordan. There was James Worthy. There was Brad Daugherty. They're all just skinning and grinning until Villanova hit that last shot. And oops. But we were supposed to win. We had the popular vote. Well, it didn't win. So the second Hanky of 2016 goes to the North Carolina Tar Heels. Make sure you win the game before you start the party. The third Hanky is in the Stay in Your Lane category, and this goes to Mr. Tim Tebow. Okay? Mr. Tebow is now trying to play baseball. All right? Now, he was doing very well as an SEC commentator, and, you know, he actually won a playoff game as an NFL quarterback. But that didn't work out. So now he's trying to play baseball. Timmy boy, okay, take off the luster. Go back to where you're good at. Stay in your lane. So, but in a, but still, congratulations on your hanky. Our fourth hanky of the year is in the category of down, is in the down goes Frazier category. Now, you know, when you got sports, you always get fights and you always get brawls, you always get things, but this particular one deserves a hanky in the down goes Frazier category. This goes to Ronan O'Dor. Now, you may not know who Ronan O'Dor is. Ronan O'Dor is a second baseman for the Texas Rangers, okay? In a game in early May, there was a game between them and the Toronto Blue Jays, in which there was a brawl that ensued. Ronan O'Dor hit the Toronto Blue Jay right fielder, Jose Bautista, with a shot that rocked the nation, that brought memes throughout the nation. You need to look it up. Ronan O'Dor, his first name is spelled R-O-U-G-N-E-D, last name Odor, like stank. And that punch he hit Bautista did stank, knocked him cold. You got to see that. Turn his face inside out. So for the in the down goes Frazier category, Ronan O'Dor, you get the hanky. Now, our fifth category is at the Meatloaf 2 out of 3 ain't bad category. If y'all know who Meatloaf is, he was a rocker from back in the day. He made a song, and the tagline to his verse was 2 out of 3 ain't bad. So anyway, the 2 out of 3 ain't bad category goes to our lovely brothers and sisters in the city of Cleveland. Okay, you had an amazing sports year. You need to be recognized. Not any one individual, but you had your Believeland documentary, your beloved Cavs, and LeBron James brought you home a championship. Your beloved Cleveland Indians went to the World Series, won 7 games for you. It was just a lovely, lovely sports season, and then the Browns had to play. And if it wasn't for last week, they blew my thunder. If it wasn't for a last-second field goal, they were on the verge of going 0-16. Well, now they'll be 1-15. It's not a lot to talk about, but look, two of your teams made it to the championship. So guess what? 2 out of 3 ain't bad, and that gets you the hanky. So way to go. Number 6, speaking of the Cleveland Cavaliers and winning the championship, this brought out the 6th category of talking loud and saying nothing. The talking loud, saying nothing category, hanky goes to the Golden State Warriors, a team that won 73 ball games, a team that had the 7th game of the finals at home, a team that had a 3-1 lead, okay, going home for a chance to win a championship and was talking loud and saying nothing. So at the end, it ended up being just a bunch of empty talk, empty smack, empty nothing. For talking loud, saying nothing, the Golden State Warriors of 2016, you get the hanky. Moving on to Category 7. Okay, this is in the fixing the plate, but didn't bring nothing to the party category. Now, this is the team that was doing the job all year long. You thought you had them picked to win a championship. We've been talking about this, you know, with the Final Four of the college football. Well, this actually happened this year. We have, with the fixing the plate but didn't bring nothing to the party category, we got the Texas Rangers. The Texas Rangers won 95 games this year. They had the best record in baseball in the American League, and then they got swept in the playoffs. The playoffs, they got swept in the playoffs by the Toronto Blue Jays, a team that had to sneak in into the wild card, got swept, lost the first 2 games at home. See, that's what happens when you're fixing a plate but didn't bring nothing to the party. What happens is you get a hanky. Okay, we go to our next category, which is the NFL Color Rush category. Now, listen. Since the NFL is bound and determined to have games on Thursdays with these uniforms, my God, then I guess you're just going to leave it to us who still have sight to see to try to gauge these things. So since you're going to do that, NFL, I'm going to tell you that the hanky goes to the Seattle Seahawks for the most god-awful lime green uniforms I've ever seen in a game against the Rams. They could see them running around in space. All right? If you look at it, you know, it's like, where's the football? You know, my eyes. But if you're going to do this color rush stuff and you're going to have a lime green uniform on an NFL team, you're going to get the hanky. And number nine. Now, this is a good hanky to have, okay? This is in the Welcome Back Carter category. We have teams that kind of gone away, hadn't heard from them, thought they had fallen into obscurity, and yet, lo and behold, here they are again. Welcome back to Dreams to Your Ticket Out. We want to welcome back the Oakland Raiders. We want to welcome back the Dallas Cowboys. Both of these teams of lore, have come back to their former selves. Welcome back, Carter. And I would be remiss if I didn't say welcome back to the world champion Chicago Cubs. You all three get the coveted hanky. Job well done for you and your fan bases. And the final hanky that's going to be given out in 2016, this is in the Thanks for the Memories category. And we've already talked about the many, many, many iconic individuals that we've lost here this year. But there were some that absolutely transformed the nation in what they did. And if we did not take a moment to say thank you and give a very warm and loving hanky to Muhammad Ali, Arnold Palmer, Gordie Howe, just recently Lavelle Edwards, the BYU coach, and Pat Summitt. Think about what those folks alone did in the sports world and in society in general. Muhammad Ali, we had a show basically talking about him and all of his attributes. Arnold Palmer, Arnie's Army, where he transcended golf. Gordie Howe, Mr. Hockey. Lavelle Edwards, winning a national championship with BYU, their longstanding coach, the stadium named after him, and Pat Summitt, the longtime Tennessee women's basketball coach. You know, it actually helped put women's basketball on the map. They will all be very missed, but they will all be very loved, and they will be very well remembered. So while there's been a lot of fun in presenting the hankies, this is one that, you know, I say thanks for the memories. We love you. We're going to miss you. That's going to be the hankies for 2016. It was a lot of fun. Not to come.
Wow. Hey, love it. Man, thank you for getting to work. That was the inaugural. If you didn't have a chance to hear all of them, please check us out on iTunes, or you can be on Stitcher. You can subscribe to Real Sports Guys. We'll probably clip this one out and have its own separate podcast so people can get to it easily. Hank, you did your thing, man. Love it. You know, it's been a great 2006. You know, as we close out, what's one thing that you're hoping to see in 2017? Let's share that with our listeners that we hope and believe will happen, or one or two. I'll give you that floor. We're going to go a little bit into OT, and so you'll be able to hear this on our podcast. Drop, but what are some things that you're looking for in 2017?
Well, first and foremost, on a very serious tip, I look for our nation to come together. You know, we can't do anything alone. As you heard me say in the hankies, while I joke and jest, it is about teamwork. We all got to be on the same team. And that's the one thing I hope that, regardless of what happens in 2017, that we try to find a way as a nation to come together as a people, as a whole. So that's the one true thing, you know, regardless of anything else, sports and what we talk about is a distraction. But in reality, we need to come together as a people. And I do hope and I do pray that we take the next year and take out of this year all that loss, but try to gain more going into 2017.
Yeah, I'll agree. I think my hope is that that we are all able to see the best in all of us and our ability to you know, whether you're spiritual enough or not, you know, operate from the standpoint of love thy neighbor. And if you can, as you would love yourself, if you can frame it like that, then we can understand how we need to operate to make this country a better place. And the one thing I have for RSG for 2017, you know, we believe in the power of sports to be an avenue for changing the world. And in 2017, our platform is looking to put that on display. You had a chance to see RSG live and get a sense of that. You know, we're hoping to take that experience to the next level in a way that could have not just a show, but can have an impact in the community. And we're working on some things like that. But, you know, we want to do our little part in the space and the lane that we travel in to contribute to this concept of loving our neighbor as we love ourselves, making an impact. And so that's what we looked at to happen in 2017. We believe it's going to be a great year for us. And we thank you for being part of this and being part of our experience and being along with the ride. And, Hank, as usual, brother, until we see each other in person, man, got a lot of love for you, man. And you have a blessed new year. And I look forward to it again in 2017, brother.
Same to you, brother. To you and your family, a very happy 2017. And, you know, for the RSG family, it's onward and it's upward, buddy.
That's it, y'all. Till next time, we're out.
Happy New Year.